Hi, my name is Matt. I'm the founder of Regeneration Projects, a small business that sees two great bays and a river as our most important business partners. We started at a kitchen table during Melbourne's epic COVID-19 lockdown, and now we're a B Corp and actor in the UN decade on ecosystem restoration. As we begin this episode, we'd like to acknowledge the two great bays, Port Phillip and Western Port, which are known to First Peoples as Nam and Wurrumbirrin, or Murrumbik. Without the bays and the Birrarung Yarra River, we wouldn't be in business today. So we show deep respect to First Nations elders, past and present, who for over 60,000 years have cared for the bays, Birrarung, and their catchment areas. Their ecological knowledge inspires us to practice business in partnership with nature. Now, choosing a career that tackles environmental issues like climate change, biodiversity loss, or pollution can be incredibly rewarding, but also super tough. When we listen to the stories of passionate and pioneering professionals, it stokes our inner fire and belief so that we can keep doing the work that we know needs to be done to benefit future generations. That's what the Two Bays podcast is all about. Stories of hope, grit, and determination, inspiring the planet's next generation of ecological leaders and entrepreneurs. This series is made in partnership with the Mornington Peninsula Shire Council and celebrates the stories of business and community champions at the forefront of local climate action. Let's tune in. Wamajika, welcome and come with purpose to the Two Bays podcast. My name's Matt Sykes and along with Claire Wilde, it's an absolute pleasure to be taking another step in this particular climate action series that we're teaming up with the Mornington Peninsula Shire Council. It's all about spotlighting local businesses and organisations that are finding ways to turn climate change into a business opportunity. Before we begin, we will also acknowledge those Boonwurrung and Bunurong connections to this beautiful place, the Mornington Peninsula, the relationship with Nam, Port Phillip, and also Western Port, which is known as Murrumbik or Wurrumbirrin, and just acknowledging their elders past and present, those living connections to country and that rising knowledge that gives us a bit of a way of navigating through this time of change. And through summer, we're seeing different things with storms and inconsistent weather, and it just brings home why, it is actually everyone's business to really think about how we can tackle climate. Now, joining us today is Josh Melnick, who is a co-founder, along with his wife, Narelle, for the Revillaging Project. So we're going to be really curious to unpack and hear his journey. He's actually come from the Big Apple, New York City, and he's landed on the beautiful Mornington Peninsula. So thanks so much for joining us, Josh, and I'm going to pass straight to you with an opener. And really what we're curious about is, you know, as someone that's living and working on the peninsula, why is climate action so important for this particular place?
Yeah. I think the best way into that question is actually in a bit of a story, which is how we ended up here, because it is quite a bit of a move from New York, or actually Los Angeles, where our three children were born, to the Mornington Peninsula. And, you know, I think that everything shifted for us when we had kids. You know, we're obviously, you know, maybe not obviously, but, you know, left-leaning, environmentally friendly, cause-driven, you know, kind of American leftist intellectual artist. That's my background. And once I had kids, I very much and very quickly realized that children basically become who we are as humans. They don't do what we say. So we can say, you should care about the environment, you should care about climate action. But what does that mean to a child? And really, to have any impact in the world, to do anything in terms of climate action, we have to essentially role model for our children. We have to create young climate activists. And this doesn't happen through words. This happens to sort of bring in an indigenous perspective through elders, through mentoring, through being on country, and through actually kind of reconnecting with nature, reconnecting with country, not in an intellectual way, but in an embodied way. And so I think that for Narelle and I, we for a long time asked, well, like, where's the village? How do we raise conscious children who actually care about the environment? Because living in sort of call it the standard culture of family life, where, you know, I had a high paying job in society to pay for my children's private progressive schools so we could tell them about environmentalism while still living a very consumer driven, individualistic life. Like, there's too much contradiction there. And I think that children are the greatest mirrors for this kind of stuff. And the question kept sitting with us, where's the village? How do you raise conscious children? How do you do this? And these questions kind of all bubbled, and then COVID happened. And we had this amazing opportunity to leave America because my wife's Australian and my three children have Australian passports, and come to Australia. We'd been married here in the Mornington Peninsula. We knew it was a beautiful place. It seemed like an incredible opportunity for the children to reconnect to their family here, their culture here, the environment here. It was never intended to be a long stay, but something happened while we were here. A few things happened that were congruent. One of which was a bush tucker walk with Uncle Lionel, who has an organization called Living Culture, who I'm sure you're talking to, or if not, you should be, because he's an incredible guy. And my oldest son, who has special needs, kind of on that walk, just came alive. And something started to spark, you know? And then there were sort of all these things coming in, these very charming things that happened. And long story short, we were driving down the road and we passed a property which was for sale, which we could live in, which was also an off-the-grid meditation center. And while we had never thought of living, you know, in an off-the-grid meditation center, all of a sudden we thought, well, this may be the hub. This may be the place to start the village and ask the questions. So really, it's climate action is everything, but it sort of comes a little bit down the line for us. And so the first thing is kind of living in integrity with your values and in integrity with Mother Nature. So, you know, we started the project, bought the place with a vision, not knowing anyone in Australia, not really. And kind of, you know, as these things start to happen, that when you state your intention, things started to align and we started to call in community and build the village and build connections. And, you know, that's the seed of the Revillaging Project, the question, you know, how to create a sustainable future.
Josh, I love that story. That is incredible. Just thinking back to what you were saying about your children, that actually reminds me of an anecdote from this morning, in fact. I promise this will be relevant. So this morning I was at a breakfast where we had a whole bunch of sustainability people from various organizations coming to talk about what nature and biodiversity means for the organization. And the conversation kind of turned into this, well, how do we sell nature and how do we sell biodiversity to the board and how do we make the executive team care about it and how do we create a business case and how do we show that, you know, financially it's worth the investment and all these things. And there was this moment where we all kind of paused and realized, as you were saying, Josh, that children have this inherent understanding of the fact that obviously humans and nature are interdependent on one another. And often in the capitalist world that we live in, as you were saying, we separate ourselves from nature. When you talked about having a high paying job so you could send your children to, you know, private progressive schools to learn about environmentalism, all these things, but they feel kind of contradictory. And actually at the end of the day, tapping back into that visceral connection that I'm pretty sure all humans have, that visceral connection to nature that we have, that we've probably unlearned if we've grown up in a capitalist system. Trying to unlearn that, trying to reconnect with that younger perspective on the world and almost that childlike view of how things work can be really valuable. That was a little reflection from me, but I'd love to turn it back to you and hear a little bit more about the Revillaging Project. In particular, I'd love to hear more about how it grew, because you've talked a little bit about the thought process behind how it formed, but I'd just love to hear about its development since you started it.
Well, very much we're still an organization in development. We're in the really, really early stages. And what I really have grown to love about this project is that it is consistently emerging and changing, and really kind of there's a sort of clear vision and intention, which is really, which I'll describe now, which I think that'll give it some context, and then to give it a little bit more to more about the emergence. So part of the idea was that we realized that often, like, this question for people of like, what can I do facing everything in the world, like all the multiple meta crises on every front, right? And you're raising kids and you're trying to do your part. And it's like, what can I do really? And sometimes it can get really overwhelming. And so part of the idea is to take a manageable slice of life and create a model for people. Because I realized quite early, I do also a lot of work with men and men's work. And one of the things I realized early on is that, you know, men, a lot of men, like, we want to show up as good dads and be emotionally available. But much like our disconnection from nature, culturally as men, we're often kind of disconnected from our emotions. But once a guy who just wants to show up as a good dad saw it modeled of how he could talk, how he could be, what authenticity looks like, then it kind of dropped in for his own unique voice to be embodied and be authentic. And so the idea of the project was a little bit to create a space which could essentially be a hands-on model, a place that people could visit to experience like what regenerative principles in a small ecosystem actually look like. So often we go and we deal with like the wellness of our body, and we go off to a yoga class or a retreat, or we deal with our this thing and we go off to there, or we go off on a bushwalk, or we go off, oh, thank you, Willow. It's my daughter, Willow. Or we go off to do these things separately. And I guess that what we felt is that if we could create a space where people could visit and families could come and they could actually, in an embodied way, let's call it experience a model of regenerative principles in action. And to us, what that looks like is kind of the overlapping Venn diagram of, call it human wellness, wellness of the land with regenerative agriculture, ecological preservation in terms of restoring a certain amount of the wetlands here on the property, family systems, like the wellness of families and mothers, which involves sort of like being, sort of embracing, call it the magic of childhood that you referenced, Claire, and indigenous wisdom, and creating a space where people could come and visit and experience all those things in an overlapping way. And because the property which we're on is about 20 acres, 15 of which is devoted back to ecological preservation, 3 of which is a small regenerative farm practicing biodynamic principles. There's a wellness and meditation center there for the sort of body and events and things like that. And a small area called the Children's Village, which is devoted to workshops for children and special workshops like that. And down the line, we hope to have, and, you know, sort of these very, call it self-sustaining, regenerative, local, like, food systems and wellness systems that people can come and experience. So, you know, there'll be lots of lovely food cooked here that's made right from the farm. And there'll be lots of kids who are learning about culture, say from Uncle Lionel on bushwalks, picking bush taka and ingraining that in their workshops, cooking the food, preparing the food in a sort of like full hands-on sensory experience. And maybe even down the line, the idea really that as parents, what we need is not just models of different ways of being, but also community around us, because really, I think the work here, and now I'm a bit on a tangent, so cut me off if you need to, but I think the real work here and what we've really realized in this regenerative project is the real work is in relationships. It's how we relate to ourselves. It's how we relate to other people. And that's really what the village is. And that's really where regeneration starts. So this is like the outer framework, if that makes sense. And within that, within each of those realms, our intention being a sort of small family-led organization, basically we live here and it's not like we have huge investors or this, it's just like we live here and we've thrown our life behind this, is we've started to call in partners whose area of passion and interest is in each of those major limbs of the project, and basically said like, well, let's work on this land for this land together. And if there's something here that vibrates to them about being part of the village, whether it's their farming skills or their, you know, ecological preservation, you know, working with the wetlands, whatever, let's sort of figure out how to work together and let's figure out how to bring in community to that work and open a conversation, because like, we don't have any answers at all, but I feel like we need some hope. And this little like stake in the ground is our attempt as a family and as members of this community to like create a little oasis of hope and also a testing ground, an experimentation ground, and all of those things, while at the same time trying not, you know, not to kill our three kids and keep them fed and out the door to school and everything. So that's what's happening here.
Oh, thanks so much, Josh. I've got one more question and then I might hand over to Matt again. And you might laugh that I'm even asking this question because I might be oversimplifying things. What I was going to ask is, how does your work contribute to climate action? But I'm also really aware that based on what you've said, that might be a really naive thing to say because it might almost be siloing climate action off into its own little area where things like community well-being and, as you said, Indigenous wisdom and nature are completely thought of as completely separate. So I'm just curious from your perspective if you see climate action as part of what you do.
So I see climate action as that little center point where all the places of the Venn diagram overlap, because they're actually all climate action, right? Like climate action is inspiring people to connect to country and to connect to their environment. And, you know, I feel really grateful, just to say, for the Mornington Peninsula Shire and the climate action grants, because we've actually applied now 3 years in a row and we've received 2 climate action grants from the Mornington Peninsula. And while they haven't funded the whole project, they've funded parts of the project, which are, you know, integral to the project. So, you know, one of them was a worm farm, which really is the basis of our soil regeneration. It's a big, large-scale worm farm where people can come and bring their waste, but can also leave with worm juice and can also help to build our soil. And again, it's just like, it's a small thing, but it's a huge thing. And there's another big climate action grant that we're just preparing for now, which will be an Indigenous shelter belt that acts as a bit of a corridor and a walkway between the regenerative farm and the wetlands restoration project. So again, I think they're related, and the climate action grant and climate action in general has allowed us to sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like bridge these different things, you know? Like, whereas like there's certain times there are land care groups and then there are these Indigenous groups. It's like what we've done and what you'll see in our climate action grant, if you follow up with us, is we're doing a huge shelter belt planting of Indigenous trees, but we're doing it in the context of a cultural ceremony, and community will gather and there'll be a smoking ceremony. And Uncle Lionel will actually talk in a spiritual sense about the trees that we're planting. And then also in a food sense and in a ecological sense and in a sort of systemic way. And then we'll plant the trees, you know, and then we'll have some tea or something. And over time, these trees will be a major benefit both to the farm, the wetlands, the overall biodiversity, the bees on our property. It's going to be like this thing. So it starts little and it gets big. And I think that's the beautiful thing about these climate action grants. So.
Yeah, that image of from little things grow, little things, big things grow. One of the famous Paul Kelly and Kev Carmody songs, an absolute classic. And a shout out to Lionel and the Living Culture team. We're also big fans of their work. You know, what's interesting, you know, as we're talking about this philosophical and this quite embodied and integrated way of, you know, let's say developing a property and raising a family and starting a business. And then, you know, as you hint at, Claire, we exist within a very kind of Western-minded society where if we talk about climate action in a mainstream context, like it is that worm farm, it is that shelter belt that are providing these really practical, down-to-earth, simple things that we can do. But on their own, they're just like little stepping stones or little, you know, ripples as part of a bigger wave. But I think that noticing both, and one of the things that comes out, you know, we talk about outcomes and the benefits to businesses and so on, and the way that can lead to positive ripple effects of a more integrated, or let's say regenerative form of economic development on the peninsula. There is this element of wellness that you've mentioned a couple of times, and you're sounds like there's this wellness of land, there's wellness of family, but there's also wellness in the financial sense of, you know, this business model or this thing that it can enable, you know, you to share your skills and providing experiences. I'm curious, is there like an experience or a tour, a workshop or something that you've done where you've been able to cross that bridge and you've been able to create this beautiful experience for these people, and you know, that's connected to some of the regen work that you're doing on the property in yeah, that bigger picture of wellness maybe that you're describing?
Yeah, when you say connect to people and create this experience of wellness, are you also talking about financial wellness as well along with those in a business sense?
Yeah, and from yourself, like, I mean, we are curious because, you know, it's something, there's a lot of small businesses on the Mornington Peninsula, and when they come down to their day-to-day business management, many of them find it hard to think of like, oh, look, I've got to put, you know, climate on my agenda this weekend. I've got to, you know, I've got to speak to these clients and these suppliers, and I've got to look after this strategy, and we've got to manage our profit and loss statement. We've got to do all these things, and now we've got to do something about climate. So I guess from a practical, you know, business management perspective, you know, I think that's one of the challenges of saying, hey, look, it can just be part of doing day-to-day business. It doesn't have to be, it might feel like something to start that's different in the beginning, but very quickly it just becomes part of the whole picture.
Yeah, for sure. I think like any habit, right? Like at first it feels weird or a little bit hard, or there might be friction, and then after a while you're just, you know, doing it and reaping the benefits of it. So maybe that's one way to look at it. You know, in all just, you know, clarity and authenticity, we're not a fully functioning business yet. Like, you know, we have a vision and we have a business plan. And I think that, you know, there's a really beautiful and abundant space forming here. But as of yet, we're in the experimentation phase, we're in the formation phase, we're in the process of setting up both a not-for-profit in tandem with a social enterprise, and really just kind of building community, asking questions, and really like going through the journey of finding our own authentic governance and way of doing business, which is really aligned with our values. And you know, my background is as a filmmaker. I have no background in business. So there's a lot of learning here. And I love that about it. Hey, Narelle just walked in.
Hey, Narelle, how are you? We've just been hearing about your story and your journey from the other side of that big, beautiful ocean. Josh, you were just talking there about, you know, social enterprise. And that is just, that is an interesting form of creating a model. And it's awesome that you're finding a way of aligning your personal values to a way of operating in the world.
You know, right now it's so funny because we feel like we have one foot in two earths. You know, we're kind of like trying to birth the new earth and think about new ways of doing things and just get the kids to their activities on time and do all the things as everyone is, you know, all the small business owners you're talking about, all the parents, like I feel like everyone's just trying to do their best. And climate action, to your point, I don't think should be another thing that I've got to do, because that's not going to have any impact on climate action. It's like, I think I'm literally at the point, you know, and I know that they're all, I know that businesses like quantifiable outcomes, you know, I know that you do a grant and you write your goals and your outcomes and everything has a line in the budget. I think that I'm really at the point, and I'm sorry if this isn't what like the Shire wants to hear or businesses want to hear, But I just have to, I think like I'm really at the point where I think that these things that are actually going to move the needle with climate are actually not quantifiable. Like you can't measure them. It's the butterfly effect, you know? Like sure, like doing some things green can get some people in, you know, there are business opportunities there. There are opportunities to feel okay as an organization. There are great opportunities to learn and connect but really like what's going to happen, I think it's the children or the children of the children who start to have real embodied experiences of connection, and there start to be conscious adults around them who can actually let that magic and wisdom fly and nurture it and not crush it, not stamp it out, but let it fly. Hard to put that on a spreadsheet, but I think that's real impact. That's next tier impact.
Could not agree more, Josh. I have worked with a lot of organizations on impact measurement and also on sustainability reporting, and so much of that's about metrics and targets and indicators and measures and the whole shebang. And it's so interesting because time and time again, organizations are so interested in counting things, whatever the things are, whether that's their carbon emissions, whether that's their money, whether that's the number of people they've engaged with, whatever. And really, the most impactful impact measurement I have seen is the stuff that is less tangible and shows progress in a direction.
Yes.
And I think that whole being able to qualify the kind of impact that you're making rather than getting so focused on quantifying it, I find that that is often where the magic happens.
Yes.
And that's where we see real progress.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's wonderful to hear you articulate it as you just did before, Josh. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, thank you. And at the same time, you know, we need these government bodies and these organizations to continue functioning and to continue, you know, funding organizations like yourself and ours. And, you know, and we have to find a way to walk, like I said, with a little bit of a foot in both world, you know, pay our mortgages and work towards new economies that are going to be totally different from the current one. So that's just this sort of very interesting moment in human evolution that we find ourselves in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to rewind a little bit right back to the start of your climate action journey. Now, this could be when the Revillaging project began. It could be earlier. Mm-hmm. But with the benefit of hindsight, I'd love to hear a couple of tips that you might have given your past self, and maybe that some of our listeners could learn or could take with them as they start their climate action journeys.
Yeah. And is this in specific advice around getting climate action grants from the Shire or something
just
else?
Just taking action on climate.
Taking action on climate. Well, you know, what's that Chinese proverb? It's like the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago and the next best time is today. I think it's a little bit like that, you know, just start somewhere, take anywhere, take a walk in the woods, the bush, sorry, you call it the bush here, not the woods. take a walk in the bush, you know, put your feet in the ocean, plant a tree, I guess, you know, and then get some real-time feedback. I think, like, it's amazing. There are all those, you know, studies that are now coming out about like what happens with people when they, you know, join community gardens or when they start their own garden. And it really is true. It's like, it's so simple, but like just the act of like, right, planting a little herb box or, you know, a little patch of strawberries, whatever it is, like that's climate action. And, you know, and I think also from a business perspective, because I know that's where this podcast is aimed. First of all, what the Shire is doing with their climate action plan and where they're trying to be, I think is amazing. And we as a Revillaging Project like feel really both aligned with their climate action goals and also feel really like we want to be and are positioning ourselves to be the hub at the heart of that, where really people can come and visit when they visit the peninsula and really like get in touch with the Shire's climate action goals and all that kind of stuff. I think from a business perspective, you know, consciousness is shifting, right? It's like there are more and more people and more tourists and more locals and more people around who like this is on their radar and climate action's on their radar. I think people are innately good. I think people really want to do the right thing by Mother Earth. I think they just don't know how to. And I think that if you're a business, if you're a human, like just do something that feels good in the right direction and that will inspire someone. They just like the modeling thing we talked about before, often people don't know what to do because they're just too overwhelmed. So just do one thing that inspires them and hopefully they'll do more of it. I guess that's my advice or my best stab at it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what's brilliant about what you're sharing, and Narelle, really curious to hear your thoughts on this, if you'd like to tag in, is, you know, there's an element that's at the heart of what you're doing that's very much focused on the family unit. And there's, you know, two people that have decided to, you know, bring your kids up on this beautiful part of the world and to create something that yeah, embodies your values, but creates that pathway for not just you, but for them. It feels like such a conscious choice. And I know there's a lot of people who are really similar, like they've spent time in Melbourne, or they've, in inner areas or in other parts of the world. And, that access to open space and the land and the bays is something that they, they find, really compelling. I'm curious about that family journey as well, just as I think one of your kids stepped in and knocks on the door.
Exactly, yeah, that was the family journey. As the kid walks in the door and Narelle's trying to get them settled now. I would love for Narelle to answer this, because Narelle, she brings a lot of the family and the intention to both her work in the Rebuilding Project and her work in general, which is as a Ayurvedic and innately trained postpartum doula working with mothers after childbirth, which really sets the stage for this all. And so it's amazing because she's, now able to do this and work with families here, and also, offer that to new families on the peninsula, which is part, it's part of it all, how we come into this world. We're talking about family. And can you want to restate the question again for Narelle, just because
totally. I mean, you've just like this, you're very conscious as a, a young family in choosing the peninsula as a place to, to raise the family and to grow and find a path for yourselves. And I think that there's a lot of people that probably, emulate or empathize with that same aspiration. Just curious to reflect on, why landing on the peninsula resonates with you, and I guess what you might hope for, in that 2-3 generations time. You're talking about the ripple effects taking some time for the Revillaging Project, which we totally can connect with. But just how you see that unfolding and how you've made this decision, and just your thought process.
When we moved 3 years ago, we sort of, there was just, honestly, it was just an energetic pull to this place that we'd only really visited twice. I'm from here, but not from the peninsula. And so we landed here and absolutely fell in love with what it is, what this lifestyle offered our family and small children growing up here. And we didn't actually hold a clear vision of, where we are now, but we happened upon this particular piece of land and it just hit us and became very clear that this is the direction that we wanted to go. I think the three generation, like where we're going with that, we're sort of, finding our way with, we stepped in, the two of us really, we'd come out of the very hardcore lockdowns. We didn't know anybody, but we did have this yearning for what we wanted our children to have, and something that we'd gotten a taste of from living abroad. But we didn't know a single person down here. So we really, took a huge leap of faith and put everything we had into being able to acquire this particular piece of land. And we held hands and closed our eyes and jumped off the cliff thinking, do people want this? Do people feel the same as we do? And now here we are, and there's so much incredible community around us. And just by way of having, little families coming in and slowly sort of knitting together what it is we're doing. My work is in the postpartum realm, so looking after families throughout that first 3 years, the continuum of life from conception through, three. And that's just with this deep-seated knowing that when, and it really comes from my experience of becoming a mother and being deeply, depleted through the process of like, whoa, I didn't expect this. I'm so alone and I'm so tired and I'm so just trying to keep my head above water at all times and holding the babies above me, And so just really trying to stay afloat, and realizing that when we can wrap support around mothers and around families, that we might actually get that breath where we can then tune into our soul's calling, you know, when there's, it's always better when there's another family over, because the kids run off and play and the cooking or the laundry becomes more joyful, you know. And so being on this land has been a really slow unraveling for us, to just get into touch with that. At first it was sort of like, okay, we're going to get into connection with country and we're going to do the things and we're going to, you know, we're going to be the whatever. But it's like, it doesn't happen like that. It's just, wow, it's just got to slow, just everything's just got to slow down. And from 10 years of intense parenting, I think that's going to take a while, but it's, you know, these beautiful slow realizations and connections. And I know that when I'm okay, the family is okay. And so it's like, it's a real inside job, but I can't do it all by myself without other people to reflect me and support me and hold me and guide me. And so,
Brilliant. Well said, Narelle. And I think, Josh, Narelle, you know, you're an inspiring story in the way that just as, you know, a passionate and powerful couple growing up, you know, a young family and choosing to find your place here on the Mornington Peninsula. Your story demonstrates with the revillaging project that climate can't be put in a box. It's integrated and interconnected with all of these other things. And for you, you know, this power of well-being and wellness and village is what's driving that. But yeah, just the rawness, the authenticity, the, you know, just the integrity of your own story, and also some of the struggle, the challenge, the real life challenge of that, Narelle, and you just openly sharing that is super important, because there is a risk that in this world we live in, we can intellectualize, we can capitalize, we can talk about, you know, these efforts that we're going on, and, you know, to put it into small little boxes that are the here and now. But really it is that long term and those future generations that give us a higher sense of purpose. So on behalf of Claire and myself, thank you so much for joining the Two Bays podcast. And we look forward to being able to share your story, but also connect others so that they can come and find that intersection and that experience of regeneration that you've been sharing. So on that note, thank you again, Narelle. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Claire. And until next episode, this has been the Two Bays podcast with Matt and Claire. Cheers.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
How amazing are those Mornington Peninsula climate champions? Must be something in the water. Against the odds, they're transforming climate anxiety into climate action. Keep your eyes out for new episodes coming soon. So you're feeling inspired and ready to act. What can you do next? Firstly, subscribe to the Two Bays podcast on your favorite channel. Then visit the Regeneration Project's website for more info about our ecological leadership and strategic consultancy work. Lastly, don't forget to follow Regeneration Projects on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, as well as subscribe to our seasonal newsletter. My name is Matt, and on behalf of Regeneration Projects and the Two Bays, thank you for tuning in, and see you on the next episode of Two Bays, a Business and a Kitchen Table podcast.